Good morning, everyone. I'd like to bring the Education Finance Division to order for this morning's deliberations. Representative Youakim, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Mr. Chair, you caught me breaking a rule and eating at the table because I needed a donut this morning. So, yes, Mr. Chair, I've had a chance to review the minutes for February 27th, 2020.
Thank you very much. You're doing better than the stale granola bar I had between committees. So, Representative Youakim moves approval of the minutes of the February 27th meeting. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Youakim. Members, we have three bills on the agenda, a greeting, and then a reminder that this Friday is the Bridging the Gap Education Symposium. You received a request to RSVP to Ms. Sunderland. If you have not done so, we've got a remarkable group of presenters coming on Friday to this room, actually, to do a broad and hopefully deep review of racial disparities and challenges in education in Minnesota. And I'd invite all of you to come and attend on Friday. It should be a remarkable opportunity to set a broad base of understanding of educational challenges across the state and look at from a national perspective as well as a state perspective on potentially effective strategies that we could adopt, implement, and move forward. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought the RSVP was for lunch. Am I incorrect on that?
Representative Erickson, it's for both. We want to know who's showing up, you know. So if you have not yet RSVP'd, please do, because implied in Representative Erickson's point, lunch goes better if we know how many people are showing up. So thank you all. We are going to start the day with it's FFA Day, Future Farmers of America Day, here at the Minnesota House, and we have a greetings from Madeline Smith from Fillmore Central, one of the better named towns in Minnesota, Harmony.
Yeah. That's good.
Yes, Ms. Smith, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. This is taped and for the historical record.
Perfect.
So please introduce yourself and then proceed. Welcome.
Well, Chair Dabney and committee members, thank you for having me today. My name is Madeline Smith, and I am from southeastern Minnesota. I'm here today to celebrate FFA Day at the Capitol. So if you see any students dressed similarly to how I am dressed right now, wearing this blue jacket, that is because there are 221 of us kind of sprawled out around the area. So we have about 200 agriculture programs and FFA chapters across the state, and our primary reason for this is to give students the opportunity to learn soft skills as leaders in leadership positions, such as experiences like right now at this moment, to build up leaders in this way. We also have all of our programs start in the classroom. So we are one of Minnesota's CTSOs, which is operated under the MFSO. We start in the classroom with agriculture classes, so every single student that pursues this extracurricular opportunity is in a classroom to learn their agricultural content. One of the chapters that I have had the opportunity to visit this year is called ISD 916. So it is located here in the metro area. In the seven county metro areas, we do have 26 agriculture programs. So we're really growing and trying to improve access to our students in all areas of the state. Like we consider Mankato just chartered a chapter earlier this year, and we have eight chapters in total that are chartering themselves. So we look at ISD 916, and this is a very unique chapter. It's maybe not what you would typically think of when we look at agricultural education programs. Many of them are in rural areas, but this one is pretty unique. So what it is it's on a community college campus, and there is one teacher who has three classes throughout the day. They are two-hour classes, and students from across the area from 12 different school districts come in every day for classes via bus, and they learn animal science. They learn in their greenhouse, and they learn some of these veterinary science skills. So I really appreciate your support for all of our programs, both rural and urban, for helping us with our access, because it does take funding, and that is something that is really creating opportunities for our students. Because when I look at FFA members, I see that they are ready to work in the agriculture industry to help fill our blue-collar workforces, and our leadership positions, our alumni do pretty incredible, amazing things. And they are ready for the industry because of FFA and agricultural education. And at the very least, they are more literate in agriculture and informed citizens. So thank you for having me today. If the committee has any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. We do have a question from at least one member, Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question so much, but I just want to thank you for being here today. Before we got the meeting started, Representative Damuth and I were talking. We were both at the FFA reception last night and talking about how impressive the youth of Minnesota are. And one of the there's a lot of enjoyable things about this job, and definitely one of the most enjoyable is on FFA Day when we see the Blue Jackets up here at the Capitol. And I just want to thank you for coming, and you are another great example of what a fine program FFA is.
Chair Dabney and Representative, I appreciate you for your kind remarks. Thank you.
Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for being here as well. I will second the motion over there. I grew up in a very agricultural community, and I have grandparents that were farmers and sisters who married farmers. So agriculture is really near and dear to me, and I've always coveted those jackets. I think I told you my son has one that people are always trying to take off his back. But I also sit on the board for the Ag Ed, and it's really important that we recognize how hard it is to keep these programs and these courses available to our students, and making them a little more flexible so that they can access those, because agriculture is kind of here to stay in Minnesota. It ebb and flows, and we've got a lot of really dedicated, bright kids that are ready to be the next generation of farmers and ag leaders. And so we welcome you to the Capitol, and thank you for all the good hard work that you obviously have been doing.
You know, it was Representative Kunesh-Padin. Unfortunate, you'll recall that last year this committee recommended a significant increase in financial support for career technical education, that Ag Ed being part of that, but did not find receptive ears across the street, which right. was unfortunate, because it's a place we should be doing more work, not less.
I agree.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Ms. Smith, thank you so much for visiting today. I hope you and the 220 other FFA members today have a good experience here at the Capitol.
Yes, I thank you, Mr. Chair, and the entire committee for giving me your time. So
feel
free to say hi to all of our members.
All right. Thank you. First bill, Representative Moran, House File 3556. If you could come forward, please. Representative Joachim, would you like to move House File 3556 for possible, be laid over for possible future consideration?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 3556 to be moved for further consideration.
Thank you very much. Representative Moran, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Dabney and members. It's good to be here. I really do miss education, finance, and policy committees. But thank you for hearing my bill this morning. So members, if you have not, my question was to you is, have you heard the phrase trauma-informed? The term has been a part of the therapy and psychological world for a while, but it has recently been making its way to education. Being trauma-informed means having knowledge and awareness of the effects of trauma. This is obviously a very useful tool in therapy. But what does it mean, and what does it have to do with education? Trauma has the ability to affect almost every single aspect of a child's development by physically altering the wiring of a child's brain. If so many of our students potentially have the wiring of their brain physically altered, then teachers need to be aware. Why? Because it's a teacher's job to help students' brain develop. But if something is altering the course of their typical development, then it becomes a significant factor in their education. The effect of trauma can manifest themselves in many, many ways. A few that are common in the classroom are a lack of focus, impulsivity, behavior problems, aggression, shutting down, manipulation, defiance, and even perfectionism. And I'm sure teachers have saw all those type of behaviors show up in the classroom and wonder, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Trauma-informed education is essentially made up of two parts: understanding trauma and its effects, and knowing what to do about trauma. It's one thing to recognize the defiance in your little first grade student as an effect of trauma, but it's another thing to know how to handle it in the classroom. Research has shown that due to the effects of trauma on the brain, traditional discipline and the reward system are ineffective. It's an ineffective way of managing negative behavior. So you know, all those times that we have racked our brains around consulting with, you know, our colleagues, or wondering about maybe our own kids, or why kids are showing up in school and being disruptive, and we wasted our money on, you know, making sure we bought hundreds of thousands of stickers and gifts to someone because they did a good job in the classroom, to try to reward them, to figure out how to get your student, how to get a student, how to get a child to change their behavior. It's been a waste. Those reward stickers doesn't work for them because their brain is wired differently because of the trauma. So when teachers learn what trauma is, how it affects their students, and then how to implement trauma-informed practices, it completely changes everything. You can see fewer behavior, you'll see fewer behavior problems, higher student engagement, and more academic achievement. Yep, that's right. That's what I said. And you know, it's almost sound too good to be true, but it's not. It takes work on the part of a teacher, and sometimes it takes a lot of work, but the payoff can be extraordinary. It's not a curriculum that you can implement next week. There isn't a magical formula or technique. Trauma-informed education is about being a lifelong learner and making a commitment to helping the hard-to-reach students in the classroom. It's slow and steady changes, but over time, the impact is huge. And I think you will hear about this over and over again from those who are utilizing trauma-informed policies. But it helps the teacher to look at students, children, babies, youth, teen, and instead of saying, what is wrong with them? The teacher instead says, what happened to this child? Or what is happening to this child? And then they are able to respond accordingly to the tools that have been given to them through the trauma-informed training that they partook in. So this bill is asking that we are educating teachers. In my world, in my perfect world, it would be the janitor to the principal in the school building who would be trained on trauma-informed policies and practices. But for this bill, it's asking for teachers, principals, and a little bit of a few other avenues, including training on several trauma-related topics, extra professional days that we're working on what that looks like to make sure that everyone is getting their training in, and outreach to students or families who have experienced trauma. So, and of course, I'm coming before you to definitely ask for your support of this bill and create better educational outcomes, because it has huge impacts when we look at the educational disparities within our educational system, when we look at our kids of color who are coming into the classroom, who are experiencing trauma, who has gone through trauma. But it's most importantly, it is equipping teachers with the tools they need so that we are getting more kids to have time inside of the classroom opposed to the time they are utilizing outside because they've been suspended or removed from the classroom. Thank you. And I have a testifier here.
Thank you, Representative Moran, and members, Last week, Representative Joachim did a full hearing on looking at issues around discipline disparities and the like, and included this bill in those discussions. So if you were present for that, you got a full presentation last Thursday, if I remember correctly. But I'm betting you're Ms. Serfling?
Correct.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself to the tape and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Daphne and members of the committee. My name is Amber Serfling, and I'm a special education teacher in Grand Rapids. I'm having a little difficulty right now because I'm feeling a little emotional, and I wasn't expecting that this morning because the subject really, really hits home with me. I serve students. Sure. Ranging from kindergarten to fourth grade, who primarily struggle with emotional or behavioral difficulties. The vast majority of my students have experienced three or more ACEs, or adverse childhood experiences. These experiences include physical, emotional, and sexual abuse, exposure to domestic violence, homelessness, familial substance abuse issues, racism, poverty, separation from their parents through abandonment, death, or incarceration, and the list goes on. I began my journey in education in 2010 as a paraprofessional in a special education classroom very similar to the one that I teach in today. As I entered my position as a paraprofessional, I had absolutely no training working with students with disabilities or students who had experienced trauma. It didn't take long for me to realize that toxic stress and traumatic experiences were having a significant impact on how my students were able to cope in the school setting. I will never forget the day it hit me. I was working with a 7-year-old boy who was having a very difficult time regulating and was lashing out at his peers and at staff. And we went for a walk, and I asked him how I could help. He broke down as he described the events of the night before. I'll spare you those details. I knew I needed to increase my skill level in order to assist him and all students. I was not offered training. Rather, I sought it out in any form I could find. In my first year teaching in a different district that I'm currently in, we opened a Setting 4 building that was offering day treatment mental health services. However, the school staff was not trained in ACEs, trauma-informed practices, or restorative practices. Suspension rates skyrocketed. Restrictive procedures were utilized regularly, and staff were injured nearly daily. Due to an injury to the teacher, she was out on medical leave for the last 2 months of the school year, and at that time, I was asked to help provide coverage as possible until a long-term substitute was found while maintaining my caseload at the elementary school. The following school year, I was offered the teaching position in this building. I accepted and began working with the mental health practitioner and professional on staff to implement new programming, starting with ensuring that all staff in the building were trained in trauma-informed practices and the impact of ACEs. We made a commitment to looking beyond the presenting behaviors to build relationships, to create a safe and caring environment, to meet students where they are, and to provide predictable structure to our days. We changed our lenses. Within 3 months, the program made a considerable turnaround. Suspensions, restrictive procedures, and staff injuries all significantly decreased. Our students began to feel safe and loved at school. And from there, they were able to learn from us. Since then, I've had the opportunity to train nearly 100 educators in trauma-informed practices through opportunities provided by my district and Education Minnesota. I see the positive outcomes of this training on a daily basis with my team and the way they interact with all students. We cannot possibly know what every student has experienced, but we can be prepared to meet them with an expanded lens. One fact sticks out to me and highlights the reasoning behind why every school staff needs to be trained in trauma-informed practices. Utilizing data from the Minnesota Department of Health ACE assessment and the general population of the general population in 2011, the Education Policy Innovation Center determined that in an average classroom of 30 students, 16 to 17 have one or more adverse childhood experience, and 2 to 3 will have had 5 or more. Let that sink in. Over half of the average classroom has experienced trauma. That being said, a very important part of implementing trauma-informed practices is understanding secondary traumatic stress. Too often, educators are left feeling isolated and neglecting their own mental and physical health while assisting students who have experienced trauma. School staff needs training and resources to continue to provide the level of support to our students who need it the most. My fear is that we will continue to lose high quality staff if we do not address this need. This bill is the first step in creating healthier schools for all students and staff. We have a large discipline disparity gap in Minnesota. Trauma-informed practices can help us close that gap. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Erfling. Mr. Perry. Again, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Jim Perry. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. I lead the REACH program at Stuartville High School and Middle School. REACH stands for Relationships, Education, Accountability, Character, and Hard Work. This is our sixth year of REACH Stuartville, an elective class in intervention available to students in grades 6 through 12. REACH Stuartville received a 2017 Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals Star of Innovation Award. I'm also the 2019 Education Minnesota Human Rights Award recipient for my work in trauma-informed and responsive education, and semi-finalist for the 2020 Minnesota Teacher of the Year. REACH started as an academic intervention for students struggling in their core classes, but quickly grew into much more than that. Students needed a safe place to come for support, both academically and emotionally. REACH provides these supports and much more. This is trauma-informed. Beginning this school year, REACH is also where many of our students come when they are dysregulated for any reason. They might have been removed from class because of misbehavior. They might be having personal issues getting in the way of their academics that day. My day is full of working with students coming to see me for a wide variety of reasons. My goal while working with them is to get them regulated and back to class, ready to learn. This always involves me being a patient listener. This is trauma-informed. The 2019 Minnesota Student Survey data is proof that trauma-informed and responsive training programs and schools are needed across the state. I've understood this for years, so in addition to leading REACH Stuartville, I spend much of my own time sharing what I have learned with other educators, speaking about the benefits of trauma-informed education at other schools and conferences across the state and country. This is my mission. More and more schools across the nation are taking a trauma-informed approach to responding to the individual needs of students who have experienced trauma. They're looking for ways to connect with those students who seem the most difficult to connect with because of trauma in their lives. For them, I have the following advice. You must first earn their trust. Unfortunately, the reality is that this doesn't happen overnight. It will likely take much longer, months or possibly years. Be consistent, be predictable, be honest, be caring, be real, be patient, be forgiving, be human. If you do all of these things, you might just have the chance to gain the trust of those who have no reason in the world to trust anyone. This is trauma-informed. But as educators, we become impatient. We teach a lesson knowing that we will soon assess for mastery of those skills. We reteach when needed, but must eventually move on. While academics are still important, there are other life skills trauma-informed schools and programs teach their students. We focus on social-emotional learning and character traits such as gratitude, compassion, acceptance, meaning, and forgiveness. Many adults take a lifetime to figure these things out, so we come back to these life skills with our students over and over, year after year. This is trauma-informed. I'd like to share a lesson that I recently taught in REACH. It had to do with five of the top indicators for success or struggle in school and in all areas of life. They are as follows. 1, attendance. You have to be there physically. 2, engagement. You have to be engaged mentally in the process and the people that are around you. 3, self-control. Being in control of one's thoughts, attitudes, decisions, and actions. Manners. Treating others with kindness and respect. And 5, perseverance. Never giving up, no matter how large your obstacles might seem. Trauma-responsive schools can increase all 5 of these indicators. Without these 5 indicators, it's hard to succeed in school and in life. Trauma-informed is not about changing students. It is about changing how we respond to them. Stuartville High School has recently implemented the use of restorative practices when student behavior has gotten in the way of academics. When an issue arises, both the student and staff member involved fill out a restorative meeting form explaining the issue, what led up to it, the resulting misbehavior, how they felt about it, and their plan to restore the relationship between the individuals involved. I've worked with students filling out this form. I've seen the results. All have been positive. Even the toughest students are learning. The act of learning from one's mistakes is the difference between punishment and discipline. This is trauma-informed. This funding would allow schools to provide the professional development that so many educators across the state are craving. I've done trainings on trauma across the country and all across the state, from Sabika to Waseca. The need is there. The need is real. This money will make a difference. Every child deserves unconditional love and non-judgmental support, no matter their grades, behavior, family history, or life struggles. This is trauma-informed. I'm blessed to work with such an amazing group of young human beings. They're all great kids. Some just don't know it yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Dr. Jenkins.
Chair Daphne and other members of the committee, I am so pleased to be back here again.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm going to get right into it, and I tell you, we just heard 2 powerful testimonies. I was also here last Thursday when my colleague presented Lewandowski, Superintendent Lewandowski.
Dr. Jenkins, can you get right into it after you introduce yourself?
Yes, sir.
Please. Thank you.
Yes, because I had 45 seconds of last time. I won't forget that. Won't forget that. But okay, Carlton Jenkins, I'm Superintendent of Robbinsdale Area Schools, and I'm very pleased to be here to support this particular bill, and I thank you for your leadership in this area, because as we continue to talk about what's going on in the state of Minnesota, as we see it from various entities, that we have some disparities really happening, and we're second in the nation in terms of some of these disparities. This trauma-informed practices can help reduce some of the issues that we're having and also increase academic outcomes. The last time I was here, I talked about our current funding formula and how it impacts us now and forcing us to make decisions as superintendents, as school district, as communities between what's right and what's right. We're being forced to not address what are the mental health issues, what are some of these socio-emotional issues, because of the fact that we're looking at all the other things that's on our plate that we're having to offer for all students. This particular bill giving us an opportunity to say, hey, we are doing some things right now in our particular district. What we've done, we pulled in individuals who are very informed on the trauma-informed practices. We had Dr. Chanel Miles come in this past fall. We had her come in to learn these skills of trauma-informed practices as a staff. What could we do for the students? In the middle of the training, staff broke down. This is not just for students. This is for adults as well. You heard one of my colleagues mention ACEs, the characteristics. If I begin to ask you how many of you come from a divorced household, how many of you come from a low-income household, how many of you have some issues between mom and dad that no one knows but you. See, we often want to look at trauma and trauma-informed practice as if they would impact those children over there, those families over there. But I suggest to you that this, members of this committee, you too have been through trauma and have not acknowledged it to this day. So when we talk about trauma-informed practices, it's not just for the black kids, you know, the Latino kids, the special ed kids. You have children with anxieties about even just taking tests. This MCA thing that we have a number of students who have anxieties about it that causes trauma. And there is trauma, there is physical trauma, but there is mental trauma as well. So what I wanted to say to you here today, getting right into it, as you said, when we look at our district in terms of what we're trying to do and my colleagues across the state, it's still the fact. I appreciate the fact that you push here for certain things to get through to help us with funding, just like you added the 2%. I appreciate that. But when it comes to doing what we really need in education, we're going to have to go bigger if we're going to solve some of the issues, the challenges that we currently have. A 2% doesn't help me stabilize staff, doesn't help my colleagues stabilize staff. We're trying to retain quality, high-quality teachers that we're training in education. It can't happen at the pace right now with funding not keeping up with the expenses. We did a lot to try to address the cross-categorical aid. I appreciate that. That wasn't enough. The other thing that we talk about, but have we really addressed when we start talking about recruiting staff that reflect our student body? We talk about that a lot in the state, but when it comes down to it, we have to put forth additional money to retain staff of color. We have to put down additional money to make sure that we're giving the staff the training that they need. I left speaking with a group of kindergarten teachers this morning, and they're talking about the increase in trauma characteristics that's showing up, not only in kindergarten, but in preschool as well. This is very serious. If we really want to approach the whole idea of putting us where we belong as Minnesotans, number one, not only in the country, but being able to compete globally, we have to think about trauma-informed training. We as a district have also struck a partnership with Hennepin Technical College, one of its own kind, that's also addressing the children who are having these additional pressures about going and pursuing a four-year degree when we know that certifications and students choosing another path can reduce some pressures of that additional financial burden. That within itself is a stress. So we're trying to create other paths for students. So I ask you to consider this bill to be a very serious bill. You heard from some of my colleagues, and I tell you as a superintendent, we're struggling. We're struggling trying to achieve the world's best workforce goals and to help Minnesotans see what we all say, right? Life, you know, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If we're serious about that, I think we're going to have to go deeper and have some not just courageous conversations, because I don't do those, but we're going to have to take some strategic action to get some in-game results. So I'll stop right there.
Thank you, Dr. Jenkins. We do have Representative Moran. We have member questions. Representative Bennett, you've been patient. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Moran, for raising the awareness of trauma and how it affects children. I'm going to back off of this. It's really loud. And I also want to thank Chair Joachim for bringing this forward. And in ed policy, we read the book. Is that better? We read the book, The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog. And very good information. And I totally I embrace that trauma is a huge component of brain development and affects so much. My question is this. I have found, so as a teacher of 33 years, about a third of my teaching was in special ed. So I've seen a lot of things come and go. I don't think trauma-informed is going to go because it's very important. But what I fear is that it will become a buzzword where teachers see trauma under every rock and in every crevice and in every student and kind of become pseudo-psychologists. And we shouldn't be as teachers. That's not our field. So how do we, how will the trauma students be identified? And I'm not sure who this question is for. Any of the people have spoken here. I just don't want to see the pendulum. Often in education, we go way off into extreme. And I think this is important. And I think teachers should be educated in this, and we should, our classes should be responsive in dealing with it. But I don't want to see it become the buzzword that every student, their behavior is based on trauma, because not every, some students just act out and have poor behavior, and it's not from trauma. So I'm not sure if I'm framing my question real well, but how do we make sure teachers don't become pseudo-psychologists, and how do we make sure that we're balanced here as we approach this?
So what tends to happen here at the legislature is we ask long questions and then value short answers. Dr. Jenkins?
The short answer would be up under 25 seconds. We need to really train everyone, because if you don't know the characteristics, then how can you address them? This is what's causing the discipline disparities that we're seeing, because people not understanding what they're working with. We went to school to educate and not to be a psychologist.
Thank you, Dr. Jenkins. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a couple comments. First of all, thank you to all of you who are testifying. Thank you to the author for bringing this forward. I want to give a shout out to Amber Serfling, who we heard from first of all. This is the example of a teacher that we're looking for in the state. This is an individual, and I happen to know her personally from a mid-level organization of educators who really, really goes after best practices, applying strategies in the classroom and impacting the lives of students. So what we heard is I want you to understand this is really coming from an individual who is constantly putting in time and effort and research and best practices and sharing out with other educators and learning from and improving and going to the classroom and coming back. And this has been demonstrated for years and years, and I fear we're going to lose her from the region. I think she comes from Representative Lehman's district as she moves on to another area. Spot on to all of the testifiers on what you're talking about. For members, as we eventually will get a target, as we are coming up with priorities on what we're going to do, it's important to be informed, for sure, about trauma and to be responsive to that. It's going to take a bigger build-out, and I think I want to keep that in mind. It's not a one-and-done. It's an in-support-of. So we need to be thinking, my recommendation, Mr. Chair, is just to be continuing to think about mental health supports, wraparound services, different things like that, because for sure this is what we're dealing with in the classroom. And it is not solely the teacher's responsibility to be the success or failure of the student, basically, is what I'm saying. And I think our Mr. Perry just made the comment, you know, we go into the profession to educate, not to be the psychologist, but we're part of a bigger network. It's a team lift here. So thank you all for the great work you're doing.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, can school districts use their current staff
can
development
Can you speak up a
money,
little bit?
For this type of program.
Can you repeat that and speak up a little bit?
Hello. Representative Moran, thank you, Mr. Chair. And can school districts, and you're speaking of 43 school districts, but can school districts across the state use their staff development money for this type of training for their staff?
Representative Moran.
So I was, so part of what the bill does do is it will support programs. Let's see here. It could include training on several trauma-informed related topics. It is also for extra professional development days, right, and also outreach to students or families who have experienced trauma.
Mr. Chair, maybe
Representative Detmer.
Maybe Mr. Strom could maybe share with the committee and with the people here about staff development money. I think we're still looking at 2% of the school district's budget that can be used for staff development. Am I correct?
Mr. Strom, where are we at with that these days?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, the 2%, I believe, is still in the statute. I'll double-check that. But that's 2% of each district's general education revenue that's set aside for staff development purposes.
And Mr. Strom, is that still required to be negotiated with the teachers for the priorities within that spending? Is it, or is, cooperatively developed?
Mr. Chair, let me double check on that. The old scheme that required the three different pots of money of the 2% has been eliminated. Mm-hmm. And let me just double check. I don't remember the status of the of whether that plan needs to be shared with the staff or not. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Detmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Strom. I was an educator for 34 years, and I know that staff development money is very important. And I think, if we're just going to be going with 43 schools, I would hope that if this is a real issue for school districts across the state, that school districts and their staff, they set aside money for this, for trauma training for our staff. So I think this is important. Thank you.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you, Representative Moran, for bringing this forward. On Tuesday, we had a long discussion around trauma-informed education, and I wish we could have given Dr. Carlton a little bit more time to talk. What he says is so very true, like the more we know, the more we know about kids. And I want to thank Ms. Sterling, Serfling, for your work. I am a para on a level 3 during the interim, and I very close to my heart, and actually you hit the nail on the head about not having enough money for folks to get trained as paras. I have a bill to address training paras because that's desperately needed, as well as Representative Moran said. In our perfect world, we like to see everybody from the janitor to the woman at the front desk, because we all are interacting with students every day. Mm-hmm. And to that 2% staff development money, if you look at most schools, and they will tell you it is used 10 times over, and the need way outweighs what the pool of money is. So I just want to thank you so much for bringing this forward. I think it's a good tool to help meet all of our children where they're at, because as Dr. Carlton said, you can't always tell from the outside or even from the behaviors sometimes where a student's at and what they will need. So thank you.
Representative Juergens, final question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not sure who the question is for, but when talking about the trauma-informed education or trauma-informed training, is that something that's being implemented in our colleges for training future teachers? In other words, if we fund this type of training now for existing teachers, is this something that we can expect to have a decreasing need because more and more students coming out, the new teachers will have had this during college?
Representative Moran.
Chair Dabney, Representative, I don't know what the current curriculum is for student teachers or students going into the profession to be a teacher. But I would say if it's not, it should be, and it needs to be. This is not a phase, or this is how it can help teachers really manage a classroom, to be aware of the different behaviors that comes before them that varies. It's also about helping them to regulate themselves, right? So I think it is something that is definitely needed to be a part of the curriculum. It creates successes out of impossibility sometimes of students. So I don't know if there's anyone here who can answer that. I don't know, but I would definitely say it's needed.
Mr. Perry, you wanted to weigh in on this? Please. Please use the microphone so that we can preserve your voice for all time.
Thank you. I do a lot of speaking at schools and at conferences, and I meet a lot of brand new teachers. I would say in the last 5 years, there are more education programs that are starting to train their new teachers. But I would also say that at some conferences and schools, the majority of those that have chosen to give of their own time to come here training are because they have been woefully undertrained and have an idea of why we need to do trauma-informed. They understand the brain science, but what they're looking for is, what do we do next? How do we connect with that kid and those kids in our class that are so difficult to connect with? And unless we gain that trust, we're not going to be able to move forward with them. That's the training that they're looking for. They are doing that on their own time because they are leaving their programs undertrained and not ready to work with a good percentage of those students that they're going to be facing in their classrooms.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Perry. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 3556? Mr. Heller?
Being denied because we're out of time.
Mr. Heller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, members of the Education Finance, for me to testify today on March 3rd, 2020, regarding Senate File 3556. I had sent up to you a document. I attended the Gifted and Talented meeting the other day at the State Department of Education. It's a group of individuals. Apparently, Representative Yukum has a bill called 318086. Hopefully people will sign on that bill. It has to do with Minnesota Statute 120B15.
Mr. Heller, we're on House File 3556. Does your testimony speak to that bill, please?
So specifically on lines 2.8, I'd ask someone to consider an oral amendment to put after growth, not limited to the underrepresented students, in Statute 120B15, and then I have in there line 1124, House File 3186. This is what we had. Anyways, it's my firm belief, as we look at the stressors, sometimes called post-traumatic school syndrome, I call it, frankly, that because when the National Educational Association created their 2005 document called the Twice Exceptional Dilemma, that if you're going to have departments merge a report back to here, why not include those individuals? As we know, the outcomes for the Twice Exceptional, based on the world's best workforce, is that they're college and career ready. Not only that, ones coming in being school ready. I think it's very relevant, not only that, but the 504 students, as they're adding into the bill 3186. Once again, to identify those individuals, not just based on achievement growth, suspension, expulsions, and attendance, but who they are. It's very relevant. And I suggest if you can't do it here, someone do it on the floor. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Mr. Strom, you have a follow-up for us.
Mr. Chair, members, just very quickly, under the Staff Development Revenue Program, under its current configuration, the school board has to create and establish an advisory staff development committee and also professional development teams at each site, and those make recommendations to the board on the and develop the plan for how the staff development money should be spent for the 2% set aside.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Moran, do you have any quick closing comments?
Yes. Again, I just want to say thank you, Chair Dabney, for bringing this bill to the committee. I want to say just express two things. We have a huge educational disparities among African-American children, children of color, and low-income students. And two, we are suspending 3- and 4-year-old babies from preschools because teachers, in a big way, don't have the tools, additional tools they need to manage and regulate our children. This is a solution to a problem that we have. And we have heard great testimonies here today, and I'm just hoping that we can support this bill, invest in our teachers, invest in our students across the state of Minnesota to create better opportunities, better educational outcomes for them so that they can be successful not only in school but also in life. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Moran. And with that, Representative Yukim renews her motion that House File 3556 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Mr. Perry and Ms. Serfling, I particularly want to thank you. You both came a distance to be here today, and we appreciate that. Representative Moran, don't leave that chair. The chair will move House File 3736 be before the committee to lay over for possible future consideration. Representative Moran, while folks are coming down, do you want to begin your comments, your opening comments?
Okay. Chair Dabney and members, for way too long, we have been talking about and acknowledging the educational disparities that exist in Minnesota. every 2 years, we fund schools and allocate millions, no, billions of dollars into educational programs for schools, investments into teachers, administrators, and outside entities. We have done this to no avail to reduce the disparities in educational outcomes for African-American children. Today, I introduce to this committee the Network for the Development of Children of African Descent, also known as NECAD, who is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that was established in 1997 and have been serving African-American communities since 1997. The Network for the Development of Children of African Descent, NECAD, is a family education center in St. Paul serving children, families, communities throughout the Twin Cities metropolitan area, offering a variety of literacy and cultural enrichment programs. The SACOFA Reading Program helps youth gain and improve reading skills in order to achieve their educational goals. Their goal, NECAD goal, is to positively impact the cultural, spiritual, and academic development of children by working holistically with young people, parents, educators, and the community. NECAD prepares children for success in school and life. It helps parents help their children achieve academic and social success. It helps teachers and educators better serve African descent learners. It builds and strengthens community networks that support children. This is the kind of organization and partnership that our state needs to achieve the outcome we say we seek. Their program and services focus on tutoring, parent training. They have free children books. They have teachers training. And they also have a resource learning lending library. Chair Dabney and members, I know, and I think you know, that schools and teachers cannot do the work to end educational disparities among black children alone. They just can't do it alone. It's going to take community partners who are well prepared, committed, and has proven results to help our state and school system to be better and to do better. We can do this if we are willing to invest in an organization like NECAD that has proven results, is nationally recognized, and bring a cultural lens and staff to engage children and parents in this notion that reading is fundamental, reading comprehensive is a must, and parents are the first teachers of their children. Well, today I introduce, and maybe for some of you, reintroduce to the legislature, NECAD, an organization that has a proven history of increasing reading comprehension and literacy among black children and parents. Chair Dabney, I have with me today the executive director of NECAD, Giovanni Ford.
Mr. Ford, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Giovanni Ford. I'm the founder and executive director of Network for the Development of Children of African Descent. Chair Dabney and committee members, thank you so much for this opportunity to share just a little bit about our work, our approach, and some of the results that we have been experiencing over the past two decades. So what I intend and hope to do is to give a broad overview of why we exist, how we came into being, and most importantly, to lift up how our holistic, two-generation, whole family, whole community approach, how that actually translates to some of the outcomes that are necessary to make Minnesota's best workforce in the world. But before I begin to talk about our organization, I do want to acknowledge, first of all, my father, who's in the space with us, Pastor Leslie Ford Jr. I also want to acknowledge and thank so many of our community elders who have been a part of the foundation of helping us formulate the vision, build the vision, learn and grow over the past two decades. I'd also like to thank so many of our community members and our children, parents and dads and grandmas and uncles and aunts who we have learned from over these past two decades. So everything that I will share in terms of the vision, our mission, how we have designed our programs, our approach, everything about our organization has been generated from the community. So in other words, everything that we have learned about how to effectively reach and teach our children, we actually learned from our children. And this is a fundamental shift in how we conceive of education. My working background is early childhood education, so a developmental approach and human development approach to education is the lens through which we analyze what we're learning from our children and families. And with your support, this bill will allow us to expand our reach and actually begin to share some of the key lessons that we've learned with schools, school administrators, and policymakers all across the state of Minnesota. As I share some of our lessons and our approach, I will be sharing from the cultural perspective that I know best, which is the African and African American perspective. However, I invite you to listen for how some of our lessons learned hold potential for addressing the needs of other and all other cultural groups, because none of us exist in a vacuum or in isolation. But what we have learned from our children who are experiencing some of the most devastating and prevailing disparate outcomes, what we have learned from our children and families, we know holds implications for reaching and teaching all of Minnesota's children, using culture and helping children understand who they are and who their families are, who their community are. That is the foundation for academic success and lifelong learning. So our organization, as Representative Moran said, began in 1997 formally, but our history actually began in 1995, where hundreds of members of within the African American community came together over a two-year process and really created the vision for building an organization that would learn and study what do we have within our community that actually works. We know that there's a lot that isn't working in our education systems as well as in communities. But the community said, everything's not broken. What's up with that? And so the community said, let us envision an organization that would study, document, and really learn about what do we have within our schools that are working? What do we have within our homes that are working? What do we have within our culturally specific and collective communities that is working that we could build upon? And so the vision for our organization was born out of those conversations. And our mission is we exist to strengthen the cultural connections within our community that support, sustain, and enhance the healthy development of our children. Our programs and our program models, as I said before, we use a holistic two-generation approach, but then we apply literacy development as the tool that helps us learn how do we help our children understand who they are, where they come from, who their families are, who their community are, who are and where are the collective resources that they can actually tap in order to take charge of their own education. So this idea of understanding literacy beyond school literacy or school reading, but literacy that really helps us understand and develop who we are is kind of the cornerstone of our programmatic approach. Our goal ultimately is to actually impact our children's academic and social development. Our objectives are preparing our children for success in school and life, equipping our parents and caregivers, and also working with and training teachers to actually help our children succeed. I'd like to lift up some of the results. Our work, while it's situated in education, what we have learned is that it has impact in workforce development. through a unique partnership we have with Ramsey County. We work with African American families who are participating in TANF, and our holistic approach has actually translated to families actually increasing job skills, basic skills training, job search, and actually exiting our welfare system. Academically, our children, when they go through our Sankofa reading program, they're averaging a 2 to 5 level increase in independent guided reading levels within a 9-week period. And these results are also backed by research. We've had the honor of working with St. Paul Promise Neighborhood over a 5-year period where we were able to engage the University of Minnesota to do an in-depth study of the impact of our approach on the reading and learning trajectory of African American K through third graders. The graph that you're looking at shows 6 weeks before our 9-week intervention and 6 weeks after our 9-week intervention. The gray shaded area represents the 9-week Sankofa intervention program. What the results showed was that children's decodable word skills 6 weeks before our program were actually declining. But 6 weeks after the program, the learning trajectory, the confidence was increasing. Before our program, children's school attendance was sporadic. After the program, school attendance was increasing. So the idea and the main point that I want to lift up is our holistic, culturally based, 2-gen approach actually does translate to increase academic performance. And we've learned so much about how to reach our children so that we can teach them and engage their families and the whole community in the process. This bill will provide support that will allow us to actually expand our footprint, expand our reach and impact, and begin to share our lessons learned with other schools, school districts, and community organizations across the state of Minnesota. If we have time, I would love to have you hear from one of our parents who has been personally impacted. Thank you so much for supporting and allowing us this time to share our work.
Thank you, Mr. Ford. We would welcome Ms. Tripp. Please come forward. As you've heard me say today, please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Definitely. HOTEP, Chair Daphne, and members. HOTEP is I greet you with peace, I come in peace. My name is Marvelyn Unique Tripp, and I'm here today to share my experience of being able to participate in programs at the Network for the Development of Children of African Descent, or NCAD. I was able to attend the parent workshops, and my daughter was able to attend the Sankofa parent power workshops. I apologize myself. And my daughter was able to participate in the Sankofa workshops. It wasn't until then that I realized that I needed to advocate for my child more as her first teacher. I attended NCAD in 2017. I was referred to the program by my employment counselor. I soon realized that I had found a diamond in the rough. NCAD's programming ignited a passion within myself to acknowledge the strength and skills that I already possessed. And also, it gave me a healthy sense of self-identity through the cultural approach that NCAD uses. I gained a deeper sense of community, along with being equipped with tools to help my child increase her literacy skills. I've always showed up at school conferences and accepted anything that I was told by my daughter's educators. They were in charge of her educational development. I wanted to ensure that her experiences were not the same as mine and to provide her with continuous support in school and in life. I've built a stronger relationship with my child's educators. I've been more intentional about allowing her to see her strengths in the things she reads and in the things that she learns. I wanted her to know that saying the sky is the limit is not just words, but it's obtainable. There were literacy programs in my daughter's school, but NCAD, but she was still behind, and NCAD was the first organization that not only increased her literacy skills or her ability to read, but also grew within her the love to read and her confidence. Struggling to see value in yourself as an African American is still a huge hurdle in today's society, especially when every other second something racist is being said or done. Everyone talks about equity and inclusion, but fail to really enforce it. NCAD's program doesn't only support the healthy development of our children and our families. It also provides culture responsive training to educators, child care providers, and anyone who really needs it. NCAD needs your support to implement a portion of the equity and inclusion that everyone recites. Your support will ensure that this program has the ability to change more lives. I feel honored to be at this hearing today, being given the chance to speak in front of all of you and to ensure today that equity and inclusion within our schools is supported. I thank you again for your time today and desire to make a difference in our lives. Please take the step today to ensure that for once our children are truly supported and considered. My name again is Marvelyn Tripp, and I just want to leave you guys with in order to, we have to think different actually in order to do different. And I thank you again for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tripp. We have questions from members, Representative Moran, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Moran, for bringing this forward. This is very interesting to me. I'm wondering, having listened to Mr. Ford and about outcomes, do you anticipate a reporting of this if this goes forward and we fund this? Do you anticipate reporting to us legislators or to MDE what the outcomes will be if this goes forward?
Representative Moran.
No, I don't think we'll have any problem reporting back. I think right now, you can speak to whether or not they also have a partnership with Ramsey County. And I'm sure there's a report back for that because they require reporting the reports back. But maybe you can talk about what you already do.
Mr. Ford?
Chair Dabney, Representative, we are serious and intentional about learning. And along with learning comes documenting. It's not enough to just have anecdotal information. Qualitative, so we use mixed methods, right? So we use qualitative data paired with quantitative data. And so across all of our programs, we do comprehensive pre-assessments and post-assessments, which allow us to actually document and describe shifts and changes in growth and reading skills, comprehension skills, reading levels, and so forth. And so most certainly, we will be able to report.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Ford, do you follow the students through their schooling too? The parent who testified, you know, noted a child. So then do you follow that child to see how the training that you provide for both the parent and the student improves? So do you look at particular students who are enrolled in your program?
Mr. Ford?
Chair Dabney, Representative, we stay connected with the whole family. Once our 9-week reading intervention is over, when the parent has gone through our Parent Power program, they are equipped with the knowledge, the skills, and the confidence to actually work and partner better with the school to ensure that the child continues on that learning trajectory. We hold monthly communications and events and home visiting programs with the whole family that allow us to stay connected and also helps us help that parent stay connected to other parents so that they actually develop a community of support one with the other. And that's really where the sustainable impact begins to happen because it can't be just a program providing programmatic fixes, but it's really ultimately about building and strengthening community connections so that families and children can take charge of their own learning and sustain that growth and development as a whole family and whole community.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Ford and Ms. Tripp for this an amazing program. And I want to commend you on the data that you've gathered and the evidence that you show, because that, I believe, every organization that comes alongside schools and children to help them learn should be doing that kind of thing. So thank you so much for doing that. Very good data. My second question is just a fun one, but I love the logo on the shirt and the logo there. And is there some symbolism that is part of that?
Sure. Chair Dabney, Representative. Yes. So the symbol is an Adinkra symbol of the Akan people of West Africa. It is a bird that is called Sankofa. And it is to be understood as we have to know where we've been in order to know where we're going. And we named our reading program Sankofa intentionally because we want our children to understand their own why is reading important. Reading is certainly important for school, but it's an essential skill that is necessary in order to learn the truth about who you are. But we have to understand where we've been in order to understand who we are today in order to create our pathway for the future.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder, I guess I'm confused, when and where does do your staff meet with children? How long is the encounter? And is that a relationship built with children over 1 year, 2 years, 3 years? And how many children have children and parents have participated in the program since 1995?
Mr. Ford.
Chair Davney, Representative. So our program model for our Sankofa reading intervention is a 9-week intensive intervention. It's a total of 40.5 hours of contact. That 40-hour program occurs over 9 weeks. So we meet with the children for 3 90-minute sessions per week. The location of the programs happen at our Family Education Center in Northeast Minneapolis, as well as in our partner schools. So, for example, we have a demonstration, multi-year demonstration model running right now with a K through 8 grade school in east side of St. Paul. And so we bring our programs and services into schools, into community organizations, and then we also provide those programs at our Family Education Center. After our programs conclude in 9 weeks, it's through our community building and community engagement strategies that allow us to stay connected with the children beyond the 9-week intervention.
Thank you, Sandell.
Just a quick follow-up. As I listened to your presentation and read the materials here, there seemed to me that there were similarities between a couple of programs that are in place. Reading Corps, for example, has a similar program, which has been very effective, as you have. And also, when I was teaching at the university, I had students who went on and taught at Harvest Prep and Prairie Seed Academy, and I wonder if your work is similar to that at Harvest Prep or Prairie Seed, and is there any relationship between your work and the work done at those schools?
Mr. Ford.
Chair Davney, Representative. So the connector between Reading Corps and other cultural education approaches and programs is our program is really designed as an intensive intervention. We recognize and realize that it takes more than just an organization like ours or a singular Reading Corps touch, but it's really about how to make sure that our children and families who are struggling to, like, take charge of their own education, that they have optimal access to community resources. So we bring an added value to programs such as Reading Corps and others by working with children who are struggling the most. Our culturally based holistic 2-gen approach is targeted at helping children have an experience of success with reading, change their trajectory so that their language shifts from I can't to I can. And once that switch is turned on, then they're able to actually take full advantage of reading instruction that happens in the school and through other programs and services. So we're not trying to compete or supplant other efforts, but we're targeting those that are really struggling and helping them achieve.
Representative Buakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, for the reporting mechanism, I want to put a plug in for Representative Bennett's bill that our committee sent to the floor that puts structure and a reporting mechanism for MDE grants. So wanted to throw that out there. And I just wanted to say thank Representative Moran. Both bills you brought forward today are great examples of community-based programs that directly affect the opportunity gap. And I just want to thank Representative Dadney for hearing them.
Thank you, Joachim. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 3736? Representative Moran, brief closing statement.
Yes. So I just want to repeat that I know, and I think we all know around here, that schools and teachers cannot do the work alone of ending educational disparities, increase the opportunity gaps that we have among black children. It just cannot be done alone. It's going to take community partners who are well prepared, committed, and have proven results to help our state, to help our children, to help our parents, not even maybe the word help, to promote and create better outcomes in our state with our children, with our parents, in our school system, to be better and to do better. This is the work of NETCAP, and I just hope that we can have your support.
Thank you very much, Representative Moran. Representative Hewitt. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually renew my motion that House File 3736 be laid over for possible future inclusion. Thank you, Ms. Burt. Representative Hewitt, would you like to move House File 1344 be before the committee for and laid over for possible future consideration?
Mr. Chair, I would.
Thank you very much. And Representative Hewitt, I understand the A1 is a technical amendment, which is yours. Would you like to move that?
Mr. Chair, I would. Gets it in the bill in the condition that I'd like it in.
Thank you very much. Members, any discussion on the Hewitt motion for the A1 technical amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Hewitt, to your bill as amended, please.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for hearing HF 1344. The Santa Foundation is a very unique situation, both backed by both sides of the aisle here through the years. It's a great, one of the things that we find is we have to find programs that are in areas of opportunity that don't stop at 3 o'clock or stop in the summertime. The Santa Foundation has found that. They have really good outcomes. I had an opportunity to meet with a number of their graduates. I do have to say the chair has given this my homework assignment during the interim, and I don't want to delay any more time here. I want to get right to the testifier because there is nobody more passionate about this organization than Tony Santa himself.
Mr. Santa, welcome back to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, for giving us this opportunity, and thank you, committee members. My name is Tony Sane, I'm bringing up our Dreamline program that have been funded, I think, 3 out of the last 4 years, but 1 year was vetoed. So, I'm kind of pleased of a lot of the information that I've heard today. You know, the truth is that I don't share this very much, but you know, at 6 years old, my dad was from West Africa, so I do know where I come from. My mom was from Wisconsin, a farmer, so I grew up in 2 different systems. And my family sent me to meet my grandparents when I was 6 years old, and because money was so scarce, they kept me for 2 years, and I lived with people I didn't know who took care of me because it was worth more to them to turn in the plane tickets in the 70s. You could just turn them in for cash. So I was raised by strangers, but coming back here and being in schools, the reason that I am who I am was, one, because of my mother, and 2, because of my teachers. So when I hear, you know, the things that the teachers need to learn and what they're up against today, I know that my success is based on teachers. Our program develops teachers, supports teachers, and supports students. We put 3 culturally relevant staff in schools that give social-emotional support, which we've been doing for 7 years, that have trauma-informed training. Our teacher pathway program, which is a master's program at St. Mary's, does do that. I know I heard that question offered. So our teachers that will be graduating, and you'll meet one of them today, does go through that training. So when she gets her teacher's license this May, she will have that training. We try to take away the barriers, but not the requirements. You know, I always say that our most valuable resource is our children. And so who are we investing to take care of our children? And it's a profession that we need to uplift, uphold, support. And so we want the teachers of the future to be the most well-prepared, to have the least barriers to get there, and to be celebrated. So our program brings mentors in the schools, 75% of them, which have come from communities of color over the past 7 years, working, and we are considered experts in social-emotional skill building, increasing a kid's will to want to learn, to be successful. At the end of the day, I have some people up here with me that can go behind the science of it. Each new staff member that comes to my building, I said, you're going to get a lot of training, but if you ever forget any of it, just treat every student like a family member. And that's the reality of it. And that's what we want the teachers of today, not only to have that teaching, but also the bandwidth in the background. So when we're in schools and we're supporting classrooms, we have more adults. We know mentoring is one of, statistically, it's one of the biggest helpful in the decreasing of mental health issues. We know that more supportive adults in schools reduces suspension, reduces school violence. I hear a lot of things that are challenging us and troubling. I'm listening. I've listened to the students, I've listened to the teachers, I've listened to the community members, and I've listened to the legislature and your agenda, and so we've tried to build a program that aligns with everybody. We know you can't do everything, but in this day and age, we've really built something that we believe is fiscally efficient and responsible, that not only supports our students in our schools by giving them trusted adults that look like them, that have trauma-informed training, that have academic coaching, that do after school. But it's a dual-track program. At the same time, the people that are working with those are highly skilled, trained people that are willing to commit the rest of their lives to become a teacher. And in a sense, they have a two-year internship in the school buildings, learning best practices. So you see me coming back here. I'm committed to this work. Because I believe that it's not going to change overnight, and there is no silver bullet that, you know, over 80 years that we can just, you know, one program or one teacher or one lesson is going to change. But I think we need to make an investment in innovation, in building something, so in years 2, 3, 4, and 5, we do have a pipeline of teachers. I get frustrated because we talk about workforce development and the shortage of skilled labor. We have a huge shortage of teachers, especially teachers of color. But we need to invest in that early. We need to invest in our youth early. And I always say it's like having a house on a hurricane plain. You can't just do the roof, the foundation, or your windows. If you don't do it all, there's going to be water in your house. So I appreciate the support in the past. I want everybody to know that I'm committed to this. And I do work very hard and because I believe – I learned very early, if everybody around me is enjoying themselves, my life's going to be better. So if I can support those around me, my life will be better. And the worst 45 minutes of your life is a car ride with your dad when he's in a bad mood. And the best 45 minutes is watching a movie with friends laughing. So if we can support each other, we're all going to be better off.
Thank you, Mr. Senne. Ms. Defoe.
Thank you so much. Chair Davney and members, my name is Dina Defoe. I'm the Chief Program Officer for the Sane Foundation. I'm delighted to be in the company of educators. I heard so many people say that they're educators. I am an educator. I've had a career in education, and I want to limit my comments to the Teacher Pathway Program right now. So where the Dreamline Program does have student outcomes that are very, very important. One of the things when Mr. Sane talks about innovation that I think is unique to the Sane Foundation is, so we recognize the institutions of higher education and teacher programs and teacher preparation programs do not address the social emotional learning competencies that are needed to develop in teachers so that they can be resilient in the classroom when faced with students who are coming in with challenging and difficult problems. So the innovation of the program is in the training that the candidates for the teacher pathway program receive. They receive their rigorous academic coursework through St. Mary's in terms of teacher preparation, and then they also receive rigorous training as a Dreamline coach to go into the school, which is focused on social and emotional competencies. So these two, this partnership is what really affects the whole child. So when we look at social emotional learning, you know, academic competencies, it's really addressing and in, you know, providing individualized instruction for students, because we can address all of these different facets.
Thank you very much, Ms. Defoe. Representative Hewitt, you have another testifier?
I do.
Good morning. Welcome Hello. To the committee. State your name for the record.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Terry Ann Lott, and I'm a site coordinator for the Dreamline program, as well as a teacher candidate in the teacher pathway program. The unique thing about working with the Sane Foundation in their pathway program is that I'm able to directly apply the things that I learn in the classroom, as well as take the trainings. As Tony mentioned, we do have trauma informed training that we're able to take into the school systems and actually work with the children. For me, I am a product of the St. Paul Public School System, and it's very important for me to become the change that I want to see. We all know that there's a shortage of minority teachers in the school system, and so this unique but very rigorous, I mean, quite frankly, it's a very hard program because I'm working two jobs, doing the Dreamline site coordinator position, as well as doing the St. Mary's licensure program. I'm currently in my student teaching portion as well. So it's tough, but the outcome is for the kids, and I think it's going to better make me prepared to be a teacher in the school system.
Thank you very much, Ms. Anlaw. Member questions? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, testifiers. I'm a huge Sana Foundation fan. I met Tony when he was in high school three times, when my son was assigned to guard him on the soccer field, and it built my son's character, and it modestly built Tony's statistics. So, but the reason I'm so outspoken and enthusiastic about the program is because it recognizes not just symptoms but causes, and it deals with a way to approach causes and builds opportunities all the way through a child's young years and the opportunities that he and the foundation recognizes as possibilities. I'm proud for Tony and the foundation about the achievements they've had and about the opportunities they still recognize. I certainly hope that we at the state can endorse your work, support it, and support the children and young men and women for whom you work.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Thank you. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1344 as amended? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, did we move the amendment?
Yes, we did, and voted on it.
Thank you. I must have been sleeping.
Representative Hewitt, any closing comments, sir?
Mr. Chair and members, we've had this bill working for 2 years now, and in the interim, I did. I looked at sports teams. I looked at where Tony gets other funds, and really, this is a great investment for the state. As far as him getting outside funds, they're very limited to him. He gets a shirt to raffle off or a hockey stick, but that's not going to cut it for this program. And we have great outcomes, obviously, right? So hopefully, we can look at making this a state investment. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. With that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion that House File 1344, as amended, be laid over for possible future consideration. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity and members of the committee.
Thank you. With that, members, another reminder to please RSVP for Friday's symposium on Bridging the Gap, looking at exploring racial disparities in Minnesota's education system, to Ms. Sunderland. And with that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Sweet.